We are Michael Veazey in London, England.
And Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
More importantly, you are the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be. We're here to get you there. For show notes with links and resources mentioned today, and for other GC resources like downloads, just visit our blog, theecommerceleader.com.
In our prior team episodes, we discussed 10 principles for effective e-commerce teams. And in this follow-up episode, we are going to talk all about the topic of defining roles for your team members, creating virtual teams, and working effectively with people remotely. Michael, are you ready to jump into this fun topic?
Absolutely ready to jump into it, yes.
All right, great. So let's talk about, first of all, this terminology, this weird phrasing that people have fallen into, which is the VA term, the virtual assistants term for what is actually not, I don't even know what virtual means, first of all. And then assistants is not really what we're talking about. We're talking about building remote teams, I suppose you could say. What are your thoughts on just how this terminology came together and why it's so screwed up?
I like the leading question, but fortunately I agree with you that it's completely screwed up. I think the word virtual, for example, there's virtual reality, there's reality, and there's virtual reality. Virtual reality is not real, whereas a virtual assistant is very much a real physical human being with a life, with financial challenges potentially, with a workspace that's good to work in or full of barking dogs and screaming children. And it's the same as all of us now for experience with being on Zoom 100% of the time. For you and me, it's no different to the relationship we had before. But for a lot of people who used to work in an office, it's really brought home the fact that there's no such thing as virtual. It's real people trying to work in real situations. So the word virtual needs to be got rid of, really. I think what it means is only communicating electronically, and suddenly that's become the new normal. However, I think in both situations, the word virtual can mean that you devalue the person or you devalue the way of operating. For example, with Zoom meetings, I've noticed, and no disrespect meant to the busy people of the 10K Collective meeting, but when we met in person, they had to trek, sometimes fly in from Spain or the Netherlands to London, or they'd come a long way. They were there. Sometimes they were late, sometimes not, but they were there, they were focused. They weren't playing with their kids. They weren't trying to get lunch. They weren't trying to deal with screaming infants because somebody else had that role for the day of parent and they had the role of business person. And now everything gets a bit blurred together. And I think this is the same danger we're experiencing now in our more conventional lives that we've been doing with our virtual assistants, which is not accounting for all that stuff and trying to make sure that a Zoom meeting means 3 p.m. Means 3 p.m. and it means you're focused and you put the dog in the next room and so forth.
I guess the reflection I have on this whole issue of where this phrasing came from and that kind of thing is my first exposure to the whole idea of this, really, is as I can remember it, was from Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Workweek book, where he has this, great chapter. I think it was written by a New York Times writer or something like that, where he talks about his journey of having an actual assistant, like a secretarial type role assistant that he hired. I think in that context, it was from India. And the whole story of finding someone who was in an international, setting and who would work with you kind of for the day-to-day administrative tasks was a novel concept back in 2007. And obviously Tim had traveled the world. And so he was more familiar with these things and he had outsourced his life in a way. And I think that's where I first got exposed to it. But you're right. Nowadays, this is all of our work style and everyone's in the situation of being a virtual team member to somebody else in a way. And so I think it's fascinating how it's kind of developed over time. So anyway, I guess those are my just general meta reflections on the whole idea of it.
It's funny because everyone is now being confronted with a lot of the problems that if people who have been running e-commerce businesses had for a number of years, which is virtual communication and also the sort of daily rhythm. I'm in front of my computer at home. It's very handy. I don't have to commute. On the other hand, if I don't make the effort to leave the house, I'm not going to leave the house. So it's the same thing that everyone's having to look at now. So look, let's kick things off. What's your basic approach then? We're going to talk today about, there's a big process dealing with VAs. We're going to talk about identifying roles before we even go out and find the virtual members. You've got a solid team supporting your work. So how do you go about it? What have you found that works in the general picture?
Well, I think first of all, important to say to everybody listening to this, if you've experienced challenges doing this or even failure in your own mind on working with remote workers or virtual team members, you're not alone. I mean, this is a very challenging thing. So step one, give yourself a lot of grace and forgive yourself for prior failures and just realize that, you know, this is a hard thing to sort out and do. And in my case, I had tried to do this. I mean, hire remote international workers several times, repeatedly. I tried it after listening to the 4-hour work week and it always fell apart. It never worked effectively. And in my case, I bought a company that had a team of, you know, Filipino-based workers. And so I stepped into the role of leading that team, and it's worked. In my view, it's worked great. They might not think it's worked great, but in my view, it's worked great. And that really allowed me to see, okay, now I understand how to do this with a team, because the person who I bought the company from had set up sufficient process and role clarity. And I just added a few grace notes and kind of tuned it up a little bit. But I think it was basically a functional system. And so my basic approach to this is to ask yourself a bunch of just first principles. And it really comes down to that. And so we should talk through those, I think, throughout the course of this episode. But, you know, there are many ways to screw it up and make mistakes. But the first principles I think we can talk about today are just fundamental, and we can get into them. But I think that's where you start, is some basic, you know, kind of questions for yourself and really getting clear and getting honest with yourself about what you're trying to do.
Absolutely. It's so much of what we've talked about comes back to that, doesn't it? And it's like, it kind of sounds like a one size fits all response, but it's really true. You've got to be clear about who you are and where you're going. Otherwise, nothing will work. Talking of giving yourself some slack, or giving yourself some grace, as you put it very nicely, I think you've got to do the same with your workers too. If they mess something up because you really communicated badly, and, and the 4-hour work week is also where I first heard the idea of virtual assistant. And to be fair, Tim Ferriss puts a few things in there. The classic example he gives there is that he asked somebody to set up some interviews, and they assumed, because he didn't give them any context what he meant by the word interview, that he wanted to get a job. And so they spent 25 hours doing that. Instead of which, what he meant is some podcast guests or some podcast interviews as a guest, which is sort of very easy to forget to give people context. And you've got to forgive yourself if it's the first time you're doing it. The third time you do it, you've got to give yourself a bit of a harder time, I think, because you're like, hang on, you didn't give the context, Mike. Come on, you should know by now. And but you've got to give your team some grace as well, because if they don't have a context. So,
No, I was just going to ask, so what other errors have you made? Like, what are things that you've seen that haven't worked for you in terms of your prior practice?
Well, there's a list of three classic errors that you can get from a guy called Chris Ducker, who wrote Virtual Freedom, which is about hiring VAs, as you might call them in a lazy way. And I've done all three of these, but these are more general, it seems, than just me. The first thing is building around a strong person instead of building a team with specific roles. The classic story about that is All About Pies, the one in E-Myth Revisited, where somebody hires somebody, just gradually takes on pretty much all the day-to-day stuff, and then suddenly goes because they get a better job. I wouldn't say I've exactly experienced that, but I did find a fantastic VA who's gone now because she had family time that she needed to spend time with her son, who's got some health issues. And actually, fortunately, she managed to train up somebody who she personally knows and replace herself with somebody pretty competent. If she hadn't, I would have been in the same situation. So that's easily done. And because I didn't really define the role and put enough processes in place that lived independently of the person.
And that idea, just to follow up on it, is that the person is so good at doing what you ask them to do that, in essence, they become the de facto do everything, do all the things. They've got all the process in their mind and they're super competent. So you haven't really taken leadership in terms of clarifying roles, process.
Yeah.
And then when they leave, you're done for. That's the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you say very kindly, you didn't really take responsibility for Royal's process, I really know. I was very vague, and I still am much, much vaguer than I should be. It's hard to do. This is why, as you said, you've got to give yourself some grace. To be fair, it's not easy working remotely. Suddenly everyone's doing it, but that doesn't make it easy. The second thing which is linked to that is the thing that Chris Ducker's talks about, being unclear about project versus ongoing roles. I mean, some things you need somebody for a season while you push really hard to create a virtual physical course, for example, a virtual video course, I should say, which I did for a while. I hired somebody for that. Sometimes you got a big push, like I did a push on the website a while ago and hired somebody to do a lot of design work. But if you're not clear about stuff that you don't need on an ongoing basis, there's no good hiring a graphic designer if you're going to use them once every quarter, because that's sure. a silly overhead. Less common. I haven't really fallen into that one. The third one is a classic error that Chris Ducker lines up that I've totally fallen into, which is not redefining your own role, which you've got somebody else to do some of the tasks. For example, at the beginning of lockdown, I, for better or for worse, I think probably for worse, got rid of a virtual team member in the States because he was a bit more expensive than the guys I had in the Philippines. He was doing a lot of podcast editing and creating show notes. And then I took it on myself and realized what a massive amount of work he'd been doing. Yeah. I then got that back off my desk to my virtual assistant in the Philippines who needed more training up to do that, which is great. But I don't think I've really used the time that's become available very effectively since I've done more emails and sort of responded to minor fire, putting fires out, I should say, but haven't really moved forward on the big projects that I had on my desk 3 months ago. So that's a classic error as well.
Yeah. Yeah, those are good.
Sadly. But what about you? What errors have you made since we're being frank here?
Sadly, many, many errors. My list would be something like this. One of the things I've seen myself do repeatedly was hire people thinking, oh, I've got an idea for a role or I need this person to be helping me. And then what I fall into is realizing then that actually for them to do that role, I have to do a lot of preparatory work or prior process work to get them what they need to be successful. And then, of course, I don't do any of those things and it falls apart there, where basically I've set them up for failure because I wanted them to do a job, but I haven't actually gotten the context in which they can successfully do it sorted out. And I've done that repeatedly. And it's, I'm sure, frustrating for the team member. And then I reflect back on it after it falls apart. And I think, what was I thinking? I'm the bottleneck in that circumstance. So that's one. The second one I would say is poor communication, where I just let things lapse and I'm unclear. They say an confused mind says no or goes slow. And I think sometimes with team members and process and that kind of thing, I can get very unclear in terms of process effectiveness. And so therefore, I just sort of like pause. I push the pause button in my mind. Of course, the person's still sitting there every day, like, what am I supposed to be doing? Like, oh, sorry, I'm traveling. I'm busy. I'm like, whatever. You know, it's like, sorry, real busy this week. Didn't get a chance to manage you.
You know, so I'm bad. So glad to hear you saying that, because both of those two things you just explained, I'm so guilty and I feel a little bit less bad now. So oh, thank you.
Well, I have even more that are horrible. The one that I would say is probably the most insidious or personally revealing about myself, I guess, is I have a habit of just not trusting people. And when they're out of relational, out of sight, out of mind, as you mentioned, but when I just can't monitor that people are actually working, I get paranoid that they're not working. And then that feeds into just a situation where you're not in a good relational dynamic with people. And so that not trusting them is, and it's really about with these other elements I've just mentioned, feed into it. If I haven't set the stage properly, then, and they don't know what to do, then I'm paranoid that they're not doing anything, because they probably aren't, because I probably didn't tell them anything to do effectively. It just creates a real death spiral in the situation. You know,
so. Does not sound good. And by the way, the opposite is just as bad. I'm kind of lazy and trust that they're doing something useful. But of course, naturally enough, if I haven't specified what they should be doing, then sometimes they aren't doing anything, but that's not their fault. Now, fortunately, because I had an intelligent VA who worked with me before, we've set up a lot of sort of habits of default things that can be done that are useful. And there's always a stack of videos that need editing and things like that, that they've got a sort of go-to list of things to do. But nevertheless, it's not probably like a full-time, full day. So I totally hear you. Well, certainly we're being very honest about the ways to screw this up. So I guess like do the opposite of what we've just outlined and you'll be doing quite well.
Sure. So let me ask you this. Do you have an actual job description for every team member that you hire? You start with a job description?
I did start with a job description for my general virtual assistant. And that was probably because, no, not probably, let me be honest. It was 100% because I had a professional recruiter involved. And that's because a friend of mine, Ashley Pierce, a friend and colleague and client and kind of all sorts of things now, had been hiring somebody. He knew I'd wanted a virtual assistant. And he said, you know, we've got somebody that we're working with to recruit, would you like to, you know, hire her? And she's a British-based person, not incredibly expensive, like $40 an hour. It's very good value. And she's had some kind of record for hiring the most virtual assistants in a given time period. Now, quality, not quantity, is what counts, I guess. But she did a lot of experience. And she sat down and we created a job description and a role and posted it out. And we tried this sort of, I can't remember now, we're just getting into the hiring process now, and we tried various things that didn't work. And in the end, then we found somebody really, really excellent. So that's the only reason we had a job description. I'm grateful we had one, because even though it was pretty vague, it forced me to think a little about what on earth I was doing hiring somebody and adding that cost anyway.
So it's kind of a fun idea. You had a sort of a meta situation there. Your outsourced assistant was a recruiter, which is a classic corporate job.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. They know how to get people hired effectively.
Yeah.
You use them. I assume you use her for just a short time as a project.
Yes, exactly. Yes, project basis.
And then she
exactly.
got you professionalized in terms of what you were trying to do with the job description, and she found you the right person, and there you're off to the races.
Absolutely. She gave me a template contract, which is based on, it's a very sensible compromise. She said, one of the things you've got to talk about when you're hiring in the Philippines, which a lot of us end up doing, what basis are you hiring on? And we based it on, she based it on the sort of traditional English or UK law. There's no such thing as UK law technically, but that's English law, which is around sort of the amount of days you work and so forth. And so you have 28 days a year that you could take off. And traditionally in the Philippines, you have 33 and so forth. So I just flagged it up to the assistants I was hiring. And again, that comes to the hiring process. But the role was defined within a sort of English context. Yeah. And just to say that, look, just to be clear, we're not talking 13 months or 33 days or whatever here. And we clarified all of that. So the point being that the whole role, including the contract, was clarified by a professional. And I have to say, as I've already clarified, I'm pretty good at being dumb when it comes to virtual assistants and virtual teams. So that was one of the smarter things, is to recognize that I was going to do something dumb and hire somebody professional. That was a good use of money. And it maybe cost me a few $100s to get that work done. And I'm glad I did, because otherwise the quality of assistant I would have ended up with may have been somewhat questionable, I think.
Well, I think it's a great insight. And here's what I would just say in general about it. What you just demonstrated was there's professional levels to do all of these things, including recruiting a team member.
Absolutely.
And so we can do it like idiots, or we can do it like professionals. And then obviously finding somebody who can show you how to do something professionally is sort of a key insight in getting things sorted out properly and done right. There's a reason for decades and decades and decades the recruiting function has existed inside of larger organizations. And I think that's a real key insight. And obviously once you have sort of that professional standard that you're taught, you can replicate it. You know?
Exactly. I've now got a template that I tweaked slightly when I needed to change the pay of my assistant and up him to a different number of hours a week. Yeah. How about you? Do you have a job description for any team member you hire, or is that?
I think I probably have this idea of that I'm competent in some of these things, which is probably a false narrative in my mind. But I started my career 25 years ago as a job description writer. I was it's technically called a compensation analyst, and in a large bureaucracy. And so I feel like that's one of the things I can do. Now, do I do it effectively for all of my roles? Probably not. But I do try to start with a good overview of the job, and then the duties and qualifications, skills, abilities, so those kinds of ideas, and have it down on paper for people. And the nice part about some industry, you know, activities now is that there are just defined roles that people are already comfortable doing. I mean, obviously, for example, Hi Mariner, the editor of our amazing podcast shows, is doing this work for us of editing these podcasts. So we were looking for a podcast editor. So the industry has developed these standardized roles, and that's very helpful as well. So you don't have to start from scratch with a job description that says, what is this work look like? For many, many jobs now, there's just a standardized function you're hiring for, and that helps a lot. But yeah, I try to have a job description, and that's sort of a beginning point. I would say that would be a best practice. Have a job description.
Have a job description. Sounds basic, but that's what we're talking about today. But our whole episode is kind of a reminder, if nothing else, to have one. I mean, we can talk about it in more detail. We will in a sec. But the other thing you just said, I think it's really important to take off-the-shelf solutions. If you don't know what you're doing, start by the very standard industry norms and then develop it from there, rather than start from scratch, which just is always reinventing the wheel, really.
No, I totally agree. So, look, have you ever hired a team member and then realized you didn't really have the job clarified for them or in your mind or the process? I mean, have you ever brought people in and like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble here?
I wouldn't say so much in trouble as wasteful. I mean, we've talked about that before, but yeah, I would say to some extent, I did that with Shanice, the assistant. He's now being replaced by Jai, who's they're both in the Philippines. Incredibly, by the way, $3.75 an hour, incredibly articulate. Her English is, I think, sounds like an American with maybe a slightly odd accent, but incredibly fluent and bright and competent. I would hire on the spot in the UK at UK prices if I could afford her. I just want to make the point that the quality of people you can get out there is amazing. Not just the Philippines for price. I mean, there are some great, great people with a wonderful work ethic. And the guys we work with in the team on the podcast are like great guys. So really responsive, really respectful. And in London, you'd be paying a lot of money to find guys like that. So having said that, I mean, I'm so enthusiastic about the person that I took them on, knowing that I wasn't entirely clear how I'd use them. And kind of stayed in that state, which is less forgivable in terms of giving myself some grace. I really, it's hard, but I need to probably just join a mastermind and look at what other people are doing in my space and kind of feel prodded into being better. Because I think I've allowed myself to be still unclear about it, to be honest. Well, let's ask you, though. So what do you do if you've got a team member that's good and you wanted to get them because your instinct said hire this person? I think my instinct was right, but you don't have a clear job really properly defined yet for them. What would you do with that person?
I've done it all. I've let it fall apart. I've put them on hold or on pause. And that's the kindest thing to do, really, is to say, hey, I realize I don't have this sorted out. I need to ask if you, you know, can just take a month off or whatever. I mean, it's a tragic situation to be in. Or obviously, you can sort it out and solve it. To the extent you can sort it out and solve it, sometimes you, at least, well, let me say it this way. Sometimes I have set things up where I thought I had a good idea for a team member. And then I realized for various reasons, it just wasn't a good idea to have that team member on the team. It was nothing about the person. It was a competent operator in the role. It just was not functionally cohesive part of what I was trying to do. And it just didn't work organizationally. And in those cases, I've just said, this is just, unfortunately, this role's going to end. And that's hard to do. I mean, it really makes you feel like an idiot to have gone through the process, taken the time to find somebody. They've committed to work for you. And then you've realized you've basically just screwed it all up. And so I think those are cautionary tales. I think the axiom, begin with the end in mind, is sort of the principle there, is you've got to think through what is the system that you're building and is it actually a workable system?
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of The E-Commerce Leader. And the next episode is going to follow on very much from this one, which is a two-parter really about role definitions for hiring and just generally hiring and VAs as well. Particularly, we're going to talk about that awkward situation where you've hired somebody to do something, but it isn't really working out. What you do, we'll talk about general virtual assistants and the other sort of roles that you could have, including things like SEO and content writer and org charts. When should you write them and should you indeed write them? So that's what's coming up next. Stay tuned. As ever, if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe on whatever podcast app you're on. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do give us a rating. You don't even need to write a review. Just tap, tap, and you're done. 5 stars, if you would be great. Thank you very much for listening and speak to you in the next show. That was the E-Commerce Leader podcast with Michael Veazey in London, England.
And Jason Miles in Seattle, Washington.
If you liked this content, don't forget to subscribe to the show on your podcast app. For free resources, including PDFs and videos on topics like traffic, products, and sales channels, just go to www.theecommerceleader.com. No hyphens, just as it sounds. Thanks so much for listening.